So we started covering interval analysis. I've added a little bit to the notes, which I need to post. So the idea here, this is a method of modeling the execution of code based upon repeating regions of that code. Okay, so the key here is finding an interval, which is usually a loop body, and then performing analysis based upon that. So the goal here is to find how many threads we need to launch. So sometimes the idea is just launch as many threads as you can, but we want to find how many we need. And if you launch more threads than that, then there will be no benefit. Okay, so that's the idea there. So here I have an example. So when we find an interval, the thing that we need to find is the interval latency, and we'll use the symbol L of iota for that. L of iota, the interval latency, can be found a number of ways. It could be roughly estimated, it could be carefully estimated, and we'll do both, or it could be measured. So here is a quick example, which I don't believe I had on Wednesday. Well, I did have it, but not this soon. So take a look at this code fragment here. It's a very simple loop. So for this loop, the interval is going to be the loop body. That's this. So these are the instructions in the loop, or actually a simplified version of the instructions. And to do loop analysis, I mean, to do interval analysis, we need to find the interval latency. So what I've done here is the kind of diagrams we've seen before where we figure out how long it takes to run. So here I0 is issued. We have an add instruction. And why does that start at t is equal to 400? Because of the load latency. Okay, here for this particular system, the add has a 6-cycle latency, so the store doesn't start until 406. And here we're issuing the branch. So, okay, I'm assuming, Fang, that you don't mind that I'm recording this lecture, right?
Of course not.
Okay. Because you realize now the whole world's gonna know that you came a few minutes late.
Okay.
So what here is a simple example of an interval, and so the interval is for this loop body. We compute the latency, and the latency is called L of iota. Now, one thing that we know is that there is no way that in an actual execution that the iteration time will be less than this. It can, however, be longer. So our goal here is to figure out how many threads it would take where the actual latency would be about this. And the basic idea is we need to look at the resources used when executing this. So what resources? Well, a simple one is off-chip bandwidth. And here, we're consuming 4 bytes and 4 bytes here. Now, if you look at the code, you can see it was done the right way. In other words, we're going to make full use of requests. So when we look at off-chip bandwidth, it's going to be 4 bytes here, 4 bytes here per thread. Now, how is it that we do this analysis? Well, we know that this thing takes 410 cycles and if we know the bandwidth of our chip, say 88 gigabytes per second, we know that one of these will use 8 bytes in 410 cycles. And let's just say that's 410 nanoseconds, assuming 1 gigahertz clock. So if we use 8 bytes in 410 nanoseconds for one thread, how many threads would it take to saturate off-chip bandwidth? So that's the question that we're going to answer. Now, so as I said, doing this for off-chip bandwidth tends to be the easier thing to do. There are other resources that we can consume, and that's what we'll look at, and we'll try to find balance points. Okay, so, by the way, am I clear? Is the sound clear?
Yes, but okay. the pro- I have a so is the video for Wednesday have problems? I didn't see them.
Is the video what?
For Wednesday lecture, did it?
Oh yeah, I'll post it. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I did it differently. I did it using the cloud, and we'll see how that works out. Okay, so. All right, so basically, the first examples are going to be simple, one interval, no barriers. And we're going to use n for the number of times the interval needs to be executed. So for this example here, n is just going to be the number of loop iterations, and we use the same symbol n here. Now, if you look at the CUDA code, we understand that that loop is for a particular thread. But when we talk about n, that's all of the threads together. P is going to be the number of active threads. So one thing that you should not confuse is the number of active threads versus the number of threads launched. Now, most of the time, we'll keep it simple by assuming that all of the threads that we launch are active. Okay, but in general, that's not the case. So if we launch a very large number of threads, they can't all be active because of some limits. All right, so we have these two symbols, n and p. N divided by p is simply going to be the number of iterations per thread. So if you look here, n divided by p is how many iterations a particular thread is going to execute. Okay, so by the way, n threads here would be the variable p. So if we take the number of iterations per thread times the latency, we have an execution time. Okay, it's straightforward. Okay, and as I pointed out before, if you look at this equation and you say to yourself, well, if our goal is to make this thing go faster, obviously you want to make p go larger. Now, there's going to be upper bounds on p. One upper bound, and it's an absolute upper bound, is the maximum number of threads that the device can have resident. Okay, so on the Turing and voltage generation devices, I believe it's 32 warps per SM. The older ones, it was 64. So it would be 32 warps per SM times the number of SMs times the number of threads in a warp. That's the absolute upper bound on P. Okay, however, in fact, there are other limits that apply. So we're going to compute P different ways. So one P is given by the hardware, but another P is determined by resource usage, for example, memory. Okay, let me ask a question. So here is an illustration of the execution of this loop. And let's suppose that we start increasing P. Okay, and let's suppose that we exceed data bandwidth. How would that show up in this diagram? Anyone? All right.
The line will be longer.
Well, the line will be longer, but I mean, look at this line here where I have I1, I2, I3. How would that show up?
So I2 will be pushed much forward.
Is it I2? Look at these instructions. So this is a load instruction. It's loading a value into register 2, and it's that register is being used by I1 over here. In this diagram, we show it getting the value in 400 cycles. And the reason we did, because that's the latency of a global load without any congestion. So as we start approaching the bandwidth limit, what's going to happen is there's going to be congestion. So instead of getting the value in 400 cycles, there'll be some larger number. So this will start moving in this direction, and everything will be pushed over. All right, so that's how that's going to be affected. How many, well, let's kind of work it out, you know, in an ad hoc way, not ad hoc, but let's kind of work it out this way. So can everyone can see this, right? And you can see my messy desktop with the source for the lectures, tech output, but this is Mathematica. And let's work out right now what this is. First of all, what is the bandwidth? Well, let's use my laptop. So for my laptop, the bandwidth is 88 gigabytes per second. So just to put that number in here, that's 88 gigabytes per second. So how do we compute the number of threads it would take? Well, first of all, we need to know how much time this is. So we said that this is 410 nanoseconds if we assume a 1 gigahertz clock. Okay, so how many bytes can the memory system transfer in 410 nanoseconds? Well, it would be this times 410 nanoseconds. Okay, what? Minus 9. Okay, so in 410 nanoseconds, we can transfer 36,080 bytes. Does everyone see that?
Yes.
All right, so what value of P do we have? Well, these are bytes. So if we look at the code, it's transferring 8 bytes. So let's divide by 8. So 4,510. What that means is we could transfer 4,510 sets of values in the time it takes to execute the loop body. So we could have that many executing at the same time, after which we will have saturated the system. Does everyone see this? Okay. Yep. Now, see if this is correct. So now how many, so that's how many threads. Let's, how many warps is that? That's what I like about Mathematica. So it's 140 warps. So if we have 8 MPs, that would be 17 warps per MP. So that at 17 warps per MP, we will have saturated the system. We saturated off-chip bandwidth. Okay. Now, this sounds pretty good. I'm beginning to wonder if there's a mistake that I've made. This is 88 gigabytes per second, 410 nanoseconds, bytes. All right, so anyway, assuming this is correct, if we go beyond this, if we have more then this number of threads, 4,510 threads, execution will be no faster. Okay, all right, so, all right, so anyway, so for this, so the key then is to find a P. All right, so number of active threads, I've spoken about this already. All right, so here's this code example again. All right, so let's, so we talked about off-chip bandwidth, but that's not the only kind of resource that we have. So in general, work is something that needs to be done in the interval. Okay, and sometimes I'll use diiota for that. Maybe, or I'll use sub-iota. Diiota would be data. We could use some other subscripted value like n for instructions. So if we have p threads active and diiota, data per thread, the total amount of data is this. So the resource is needed for the work, and in the case of data, it would be some kind of bandwidth. Now I used off-chip bandwidth as an example, but there are other boundaries. Okay, so first let's get back to this. If we have this much data and we have this much throughput, then the time used by that resource is this much time. So here, X is an arbitrary resource, and this is how much time would be consumed using that resource. Now, when we do this, basically, if this time here is less than the interval time, L of iota. That means we don't have enough threads. If it's more than that, that means we have too many. So we want to find the balance. Now, there are different resources that we have. So we need to then look at basically the tightest bound. So which one is going to fill up that interval first? All right, so the two broad kinds are data movement and instruction execution. For data movement, there are two kinds of data movement. The one that we usually talk about is the L2 cache to DRAM. Okay, so we'll use theta m for that and LM for that latency. There's also the SMRMP to the L2 cache, and we'll use the 2 subscript for that. Now, as I said, instruction execution is a trickier one. It's something that we look at in the homework. We need to look at the instruction types. So one major type are load stores. The other major type are 32-bit floating point, but there are other types too. So we need to basically guess or count the number of instructions and then consider the throughput for each instruction type. Okay, so here, for floating point instructions, we'll usually use the symbol NIF to indicate the number of instructions and corresponding bandwidth. For load store, we use IM. Now, for load store instructions, we're talking about the use of something called the load store unit. And what this does is it computes the instruction address. There's other hardware which then goes and computes, you know, assembles the requests and so forth. So the load store units, the main thing that they do is they compute the address and they basically hand things off to construct requests. All right, one thing that I wanted to point out is that, so in the previous slide, we talked about these bandwidths. If you look things up, let's go back to memory. Typically, the bandwidths given for memory are for the whole chip. Whereas, when we look for instruction throughputs or bandwidths, they're usually given per SM. So you need to be careful. Usually in the analysis, we're going to base it on the whole chip, so you just need to multiply by the number of SMs. Okay. All right, so for load store instructions, for a Pascal device, there are 8 load store units per scheduler. So there are different ways of determining that. There are 2 schedulers per SM. So there are 16 load store units per SM. And so for the whole chip, it would be 16 times 56 SMs, or 800, so the throughput theta IM would be 896 instructions per chip. Now, if you look at the NVIDIA documentation, typically some things are given, some are not. So how did I know that there are 8 load store units per scheduler? Well, you look at, so what we're looking at is a white paper, one of the white papers that I have posted. And this is a diagram of an SM in the Pascal P100 GPU. Okay, so the Pascal P100 is the scientific computing grade GPU. The other Pascals that are in the lab or you might have at home are slightly different. Anyway, so this is a diagram and they show the functional units. So core here is an FP32 and these are the load store units. So here we can see that there are 8 of them. Here we can see there's a warp scheduler. So one warp scheduler has 8 load store units available. So that's how we know that. We could also write micro benchmarks to check to see whether we're correct. Okay. All right, so let's take a look at an example. This is similar to the example that we did by hand. So for a GP104, GP104 is a consumer grade Pascal GPU. We have 320 gigabytes per second, which is a lot better than my laptop. This is a desktop version. And Phi 2 is 900. So this is off-chip bandwidth. and this is between the level two caches and the SMs. Okay, this is something you can get from the API. This is obtained by using the performance counters and doing experiments. Okay, so in this code fragment, as we said before, the amount of data is going to be 2 × 4 bytes, you know, 4 bytes for each one. So here, we're assuming that all of the accesses are cold. By that, I mean, we're never going to hit the L2 cache. Since we're never going to hit the L2 cache, the amount of use of the off, so the amount of time is going to be D times P bytes divided by phi M. Substituting numbers, we get this. And what is the 32? Oh, this is something else. Yeah, this is assuming that we don't use our, just pay, all right. So here, we don't have the surrounding code. This is under the assumption that we are not using, so if we're not using requests efficiently, it looks like this. Here, whether or not we're using requests efficiently, we get this because of the cache. So pay attention to this first and then I'll explain the other. So this is basically what I did before in Mathematica. Okay, so for this particular chip, we have 20 SMs and and there are 4 schedulers, so there are 32. So you can execute 640 load store instructions per cycle. For floating point, 128 per cycle. So what we're doing now is we want to figure out how much instruction issue is consumed during execution. So we have 2 load instructions and 1 floating point instruction. Okay, so here, P times N sub I M is the amount of work we have for integer instructions. This is the amount of work for floating point instructions. So if we look at this entire expression, what we get is the amount of time during an interval for instruction dispatch. Okay, sometimes I say issue and dispatch interchangeably, but I mean dispatch. Okay. So here I'm rewriting this. So we have 2 load store instructions, 1 float instruction. So that works out. And so here we've substituted the throughputs and we get this. So this is measured in cycles. So the question is, what value of P would it take to reach, what was it, 440 cycles. And see, do I have that on the next slide? For some reason I left that off. So what do you think the, so let's work this out. So what we want to solve is P equals what? This is in cycles. So what will it take for this to equal? Does anyone know what I'm doing? So this left-hand side, this expression is how long instruction dispatch is going to be busy, how long it takes to do instruction dispatch. Our interval, remember, takes 440 cycles for our example. So we want to know how, we want to solve for P where this is equal to 440. Now, I know what you're saying. We could use Mathematica to solve it, but we could also do it ourselves by saying P is going to be equal to 440. Is that right? Okay, so if I've done this correctly, then it would take 125,000 threads to saturate instruction issue in that time. So we have two values of P that we solve for. Over here, based upon data, where is it? So based upon off-chip bandwidth, 4,510 threads. Oh, I used 410 over here, and I used 440 here. Let's be fair. So 4,500 something. For instruction, issue, and dispatch, though, it would take this many threads. So in this case, how many threads? So what we need to do is, so we have several thread limits here. One thread limit, so let's see, can I write this anywhere? Okay, so one thread limit is P is equal to 4, 5, 10. All right, this isn't gonna work. If I do this here. I missed the blackboard. See what this does. So for memory, it's 4, 5, 10. Dispatch. What value of P did we get? Someone tell me. Let's call it 116,000. Now, what other limit do we have on P? That's the device itself. So that would be, what did we say, 20 SMs, 64 warps times 32 threads, that would be 40,000. So, is this going to show up? Nah. Didn't turn out the way I wanted it. Okay, so we have these three limits. So clearly, it's off-chip bandwidth that's limiting this thing. If we have anything more than 4,510 threads, we're going to saturate off-chip bandwidth. So if you're paying attention, you realize what I did was unfair. And what is that? What I did with this limit on P was for the laptop, and here these others are limits for a different computer. So let's just change that. All right, so what's the bandwidth limit here? My 320. All right, 1600. Still, it's much lower than these. So basically, it's that lower value of P that we would use. All right, any questions? Okay, nope. So in general, when we look at how long it will take to execute, we have these different limits. So this is execution time, just based upon the latency. This is execution time based upon the resource. The actual execution time is going to be the larger of the two. Or if we're doing multiple resources, it's going to be the largest of all of the ones that we're considering. Now, one of the things that we can do here is if we have these two expressions is that we can solve for P. So if we equate these two and solve for P, then we say the number of threads it would take to saturate the resource is this value. And that's what we computed using Mathematica. So that's what we've been computing by hand, these limits on P. All right, so I'm kind of making an assumption here. And the assumption is that a resource can be fully utilized during an interval. And so let's see, let's go back to this diagram. So let's take a look at this diagram. Now, so if we go through this and we say that, say for my laptop, we need 4,510 threads, and anything more than that will yield no improvement in performance. What I'm assuming is that that during this entire interval from here to here, the off-chip connection is being kept busy. Okay, that's the way I did the math. I said, let's find P such that during this 410 cycles, off-chip bandwidth is busy. Can anyone tell me why that assumption is, why that might not necessarily hold? Anyone? Okay. So the reason is, in this case, it almost surely does, but let's consider this very first cycle here. In this very first cycle, it's unlikely that any off-chip bandwidth is being used at the very first execution. And why is that? Why at the very first cycle, the very first thread, very first iteration, why would we say that off-chip bandwidth probably isn't being used? Anyone? Okay, at some point, all right, so if anyone is confused here, please ask a question. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Let's see. So, the question I asked is, we're at cycle zero, very first iteration. And why am I sure that off-chip bandwidth is not being used? It's an obvious question. The answer is obvious, it's not subtle. How is off-chip bandwidth consumed? What uses it? Why is it being used?
Because it's in off-chip memory.
No, but what instructions provide work for that resource?
Load
from global memory.
And stores, loads and stores. So if we're at the very beginning here and just cycle zero, and we're just say starting to decode this instruction, it's unlikely that we're using that resource because we just started. As I pointed out, one of the first things the load store units do is they need to compute a memory address, or at least retrieve it from the registers. So it's not being used during that very first cycle. Okay. And it might take several cycles before the requests reach that resource.
Well, yeah. it can just automatically grab anything I want in that memory location. I can just give it the location of the memory instead of computing the memory address.
Well, it needs the right memory address. It can't just use a random one. I'm not sure what you're trying to say.
You are saying that it might be impossible to first use that resource. And my point is that it can just grab a random address and just asking whatever in that memory address, right?
But our goal is to analyze the execution of this code fragment.
So okay.
If its resources consumed doing something else, it doesn't help with understanding what's going on here. So what we did was we looked at this load and a store, each of them 4 bytes. So one thread consumes 8 bytes, which is going to take, you know, some teeny amount of time. Did I actually work out the amount of time for that? All right, so let's see how long it would take to do 8 bytes. So we have 8 bytes divided by 88, 10 to the ninth. Or let's go to 320 for the higher end device. Okay, so that's how much time it is. So less than a nanosecond. Is that right? So it's going to be 25 picoseconds during this interval that this thing is busy. So the question I was asking is, the analysis assumes that the off-chip bandwidth is busy during this entire interval. That's an assumption that we're making, and we need to understand when that assumption holds and when it does not. So I said, when we execute the very first load, at that point in time, the resource is probably not going to be busy because it's going to take a certain amount of time. So you might argue, but if we're doing a lot of iterations of this loop, then that first iteration really doesn't matter because the analysis will still generally hold for all subsequent iterations. So what you'd be saying is, let's suppose that this is the second iteration. If this is a second iteration, it's true that this particular thread or warp has not yet gotten to the point where it is using up bandwidth. But there are other warps that may have already gotten to that point. So there might be some other warp, I don't know, warp 2, which is still, which has already executed the instruction, or maybe it's executed the store instruction. So because they overlap, they kind of fit together. Okay? However, we can ruin this. We can ruin this, but all right, so let's consider something here that will kind of ruin it for us in a small way. And I'll just modify the tech here. Okay, so I put a sync threads in there. So how does putting a sync threads in here change this? How does it change my assumptions about I0? So what does the sync threads do? Anyone?
So all the threads are going to execute at the I0 at the same time?
Right, they're all going to execute at the same time, which means none of the threads in the block are doing anything other than I0. So what that means is the memory system now, at least based upon one block, is doing nothing. Now, other blocks can overlap, but at least for the one block, this doesn't hold. Okay, I'll show other examples where it's more stark. So this assumption here that the memory system is busy over the entire interval is only correct if we have independent warps that can execute at different phases, so to speak. If they are all in perfect synchrony, if they all start at the exact same time, then the assumption does not hold. So that's the important thing that we need to understand. Okay. Right, so the assumption is that a resource can be fully utilized during an interval, but that's not because there are times where the resource is idle. So the assumption is closer to reality when there are more warps per scheduler, and if you have sync threads, more blocks. The assumption doesn't hold when barriers are used. So we'll consider those cases later. All right, so I think we've gone through this analysis already. All right, so see, this example is similar to the one I did before, but it's worked out in more detail. So in particular, there's this part here, which I covered in another set of lecture slides how to do this, but here we'll be using it for actual analysis problems. And one of the things that I've done differently, and I'm not sure why, but here, the throughput for the load stores is going to be 8 threads per cycle per scheduler. So if you're considering an individual warp, it'll take 4 cycles per warp. In some of the examples, I showed 2, and that might have been done to keep these things from being too long. But at least for the devices over the past few years, each scheduler has 8 load store units, so it takes 4 cycles per warp. Anyway, all right, so basically this is the analysis I showed before. Here, there's a bit more detail shown. IS is issue time, and that is the time at which the warp scheduler chooses the instruction. RE, remember, is ready time, and that's when the results are ready. All right, yes, this is basically reiterating what I did in Mathematica. Okay, so this is for the laptop, m is equal to 8. So here we get a limit of 4,320, and because here I use 408 cycles instead of 410. Okay, and the instructions. So we have 2 load store instructions, floating point add, and the branch instruction. Okay, so the example that I showed before, let's go back. See this code example? It should be obvious that this is oversimplified. One reason it's obvious is because registers R2 and R4 are not modified. Well, this is, but that's not really what we're doing. So this is the full code example. So let's take a look at the full code example and see if that changes anything. All right, so this is the simplified, the hand simplified one. And with that hand simplified one, we figured that the limit is 4,000 something threads, but we assumed only a few instructions. So let's take a look at the actual code. So this is a code which is actually compiled. So you see the load instruction, we see the store instruction, and we see the floating point add. But we see a bunch of other instructions. So we see this register R2. Obviously, it has to be updated each iteration, and the surrounding instructions do that. Furthermore, this branch tests a predicate register, so we need an instruction to update the predicate register. Okay, so here we have the true instructions. Let's see how that changes things. So over here we have the issue time and the ready time, and this is basically worked out by hand. This diagram shows the same thing. So you'll notice that the load instruction doesn't actually start until cycle 6. And when we finish this analysis, we have an iteration time of 416 versus 410. So the difference isn't that large, given the fact that we already have a very large latency. All right, so we have 417 cycles of latency here. By the way, are there any questions on this part here?
No.
Yes?
I said no problem.
Oh, okay. Oh, guess what? Oh, I see. So in this example, we're just finding L sub iota. I have not yet added material to complete the rest of the analysis. That would be an excellent homework assignment. All right. I haven't assigned it yet, but, and I'm wondering if I've actually solved this anywhere. So the question, all right. So first of all, if we do the data analysis, it's not going to change much. In other words, let's see if I have in Mathematica. So this is a number of threads, assuming we have a 320 gigabyte per second. So for our oversimplified code sample, we have 16,400 threads would saturate. What if we change it to this one? Notice that there's almost no difference. So what that says is basically, when you add all of these instructions, number one, we're not changing the number of threads. What about how fast this thing executes? Okay, well, the difference in execution time is going to be small. After all, in one case, it was 410. The other, it was 417. So we have a teeny difference there. Okay, so basically, in this case, we only need a few more threads needed to saturate things. Okay, so what are the implications of this? And here's an interesting one. If you remember in homework one, what we needed to do is we had the shared memory and we wanted to put something in shared memory and then read it. And the tricky part here, so in the solution that I gave, something was written into shared memory, but before that point, something was moved from one location in shared memory to another. So we had an extra instruction to move something. The question is, so in one solution, you try to avoid moving something from shared memory by carefully computing shared memory addresses. So in both cases, what we're trying to do is we're trying to reduce the number of instructions that are being executed, hoping that we'll have an improvement in execution time. Well, if you look at this analysis and compare the two code fragments, in our oversimplified one, we had only 4 instructions. Here we have 13 instructions, but our hand analysis shows it would be almost no difference. So what that says is when you have these bandwidth limited runs, basically the code that you write does not have to be very compact. In other words, we might find a way to eliminate instructions here, but it's not going to have a big impact on performance. So that's the point there. Now, one of the things that we haven't done, by the way, is we haven't analyzed this to see whether or not instruction issue is going to be a limiter. But it probably won't. But that's one of the things that I might assign as a homework. Any questions? Okay, so let's take a look. This is going to be for next week. But what we want to do is look at a more interesting code fragment. Now here, this is kind of the introvert text transforms, but it's a variation on it. And what we want to do here is analyze this under two different assumptions. So basically use interval analysis to analyze how long this takes to execute. Now, first of all, what is the interval that we want to use? And the answer, but well, let's think about it. I said the interval is a loop body, but which loop body? And let's say this loop body, can someone, is this a good idea or a bad idea to analyze this loop body? Anyone? Well, the interval has to represent execution. So if I just do this loop body, I'm missing out on these, on this code and this code. So whatever I pick for the interval has to represent the bulk of execution. So doing this is ignoring all of the stuff that's going on around it. So that's not good. So a better interval is this entire loop body here. And these would be considered inside of it. So you might try by hand to work out this, but of course the answer is on the slides and I'll go through that on Monday. So any questions? All right, so there was a problem running the homework 2 code on Pulsar. If you can, email me if you haven't already what the command was and maybe what the error was, and I'll take a look at it.
Yeah, I think I'll send the screen card, like screenshot of the error.
Okay, yeah, send me a screenshot of the error. That would be fine.
Okay.
All right, so I'll see you guys on Monday.
Can we have the today's video and the Wednesday video sometime today?
Yeah, sure. Okay. All right, so we'll meet on Monday and I'll try to post it sometime today. I can't post it immediately. I don't even get the stuff back immediately. So sometime today.
Thank you.
Thank you.